Good afternoon. Glad we have a, looks like we have a full house. Welcome all my fellow members on the Commonwealth Transportation Board. I would like to acknowledge the presence of and the appointment of Butch Davies. Butch, very happy to have you as the newest member of this board. You've got some big shoes to fill, and the great work Carter Myers did for, I think, about 8 years. But we are very happy to have you with us representing the Culpeper Construction District.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Should we go with the usual speech from the newest member? No, just kidding.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank the newest member because I've been here off and on for 4 years, and I've been able to move one chair over now. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Carter.
We've got a lot of ground to cover this afternoon. I want to, we're going to give out, the staff is going to give all of us the tentative six-year plan as soon as we've heard from Philip Chiquette. Philip has worked very, very hard with the help of a lot of people to make his presentation, and I think it will be beneficial to all of us if we focus on the big picture before looking at the details of the plan. I want to thank publicly Philip for the great job he has done, and also the work that Ray Pethel did in the passing of the baton 2-3 weeks ago, because the putting together of that tentative plan had begun under Ray's watch and finished under Philip's. Ray Pethel is here today. Will be with us this evening and tomorrow for any questions that he can address. I want to say just a few things at the outset. We have come a long way since January. I want to thank those of you on the Commonwealth Transportation Board who have been here longer than I in working with a new team. I have been very appreciative of it. I think I speak for Governor Warner in also saying the same. I think that we have done our duty in responding to the vision that the new governor laid out in January and his expectations of us as members of the CTB. Bottom line was our marching orders was to exercise due diligence in discharging our responsibilities as CTB members in developing a transportation plan that the public can count on. The governor stressed fiscal responsibility. He underscored using realistic revenue figures, realistic cost, and I think that's something we'll probably discuss today. We're still trying to get a hand on the estimating process, and also realistic maintenance expenses for our transportation system. It was ironic that this morning I was down in Portsmouth for the ceremony regarding the Pinner's Point interchange project. And I couldn't help but think that that was one of the projects that we had honored, we had adopted, approved the contract last fall, but really had to freeze or delay that project this past winter because of some cash flow problems. And we must never let that happen again. I think VDOT has done what it has needed to do to get a handle on the cash flow, a cash management problem in the short term. But we still got work to do in the long term, both in our cash management as well as in our programming of the six-year plan. As Philip Chiquette will be the first to admit, we have not solved all the problems that we have felt needed to be addressed. I hope that you will agree after Philip's presentation and your questions that we have come a long way. There is still work to be done, especially in the cost estimating process. at the expense of being reprimanded by anybody here for not having the six-year plan on your at your place right now, in deference to Philip, I would like for him to walk us through an overview of the work that's been done that I think will then lead up to the distribution of the tentative plan. And I emphasize, of course, that it is tentative. I hope we'll vote on it tomorrow in its tentative state. Then we'll make whatever refinements or tinkering with that we need to do, and then adopt the plan as we are statutorily required to do next month. So with that said, I'm glad that we're all here, and I will now turn matters over to our Commissioner, Philip Chiquette.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. It dawned on me as I was walking in here that today's May the 15th. It's my one-month anniversary. Depending on how I look at it, it seems like it's been somewhere between an hour or just short of a year. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but no, it's been very good. It's a pleasure to be here with you again today to review what I believe is good work, hard work, but good work. You each have a copy of this in front of you. You can also follow along on the screen. In making our way through the, if you go ahead to the next slide, in accomplishing the hard work that needed to be done to revise the six-year program that was prepared in December, that was approved in December, we established some broad goals that we set out in front of us to achieve. The first two are just basic pillars of good business. Accurate revenue projections, accurate cost estimates. We also wanted to make sure that we paid off projects in the year they were completed so that allocations matched the requirements for cash. We wanted to do the unpleasant job of removing projects that simply did not have any foreseeable future funding in order to make sure that expectations were not out of line and could be met. Continuing, we wanted to be certain that we funded highway maintenance and facility needs. And as you know, you have overseen the investment and your predecessors of large sums of money in our highway system, and we must make sure that we preserve that system through maintenance. We wanted to keep a commitment to support rail and public transportation as we march off into the 21st century and think about moving people and goods a bit more than we think about just moving cars and trucks. And we wanted to minimize our long-term reliance on FRANs, or other words, minimize our reliance on debt. These were the broad program goals, and we'll come back to these at the end. How does the program look that you have in front of you now? How did it change? Well, the tentative six-year program that you have totals $7.2 billion. For the fiscal years 02 and 08. Now that's a $2.9 billion difference in the plan that was approved in December. It's about a reduction of 29%. It is important to remember that December was 01, 07. The tentative plan program you have in front of you is 02, 08. The program includes recommendations to remove 179 projects due to the fact that we just could not fund them. And later on, lists of these are available. Some of you may have gotten them this morning of these projects. Turning to the brighter side, what can we do? The plan does include, the program does include 1,134 projects. 857 of those are in construction. That represents about 75% of the total. Another 277 are in the earlier development phase, or about 25% of the total. In addition to the 179 that have been removed, we had to shift 117 projects that were previously in the construction phase back to the development phase, and lists of those projects are available as well. We did add 32 environmental and safety projects to the program that were either identified safety needs or previous environmental commitments. They're a small part of the package. In terms of dollars, it's about 0.75% of the entire program. A very important topic on everyone's mind, program equity. What did this mean when it got down to the districts? On average, and I want to point out that this is not an average of a wide variety of ranges, but on average, every district was impacted about 30% in terms of a reduction of dollars. Now, those reductions are slightly lower in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. We wanted to call that out because of large ongoing interstate projects. Woodrow Wilson, Springfield, and several projects on the 64, 264, 664 system in Hampton Roads. If you pulled out the interstate projects in Northern Virginia and in Hampton Roads, the reductions on primary, secondary, and urban system are about 36% in Northern Virginia and around 38% in Hampton Roads. That compares to the other districts from about a low of 35% to the high of 38% without the interstate system. So again, and we'll be able to break these figures down for you, in terms of equity, each district was impacted nearly equal as far as a percent reduction of dollars. I'd like to review some information that you well know already. Why did the program have to change? Revenues decreased. Maintenance costs increased. Construction costs have increased to not only account for inflation and contingencies, but to account for the fact that historically we just didn't do a good job of estimating end cost, total cost of construction. And we also have to cover debt service, right? Principal and interest cost, and that reduces available revenue. I'd like to take each one of those just for a quick minute and break it down a bit for you. In terms of revenue reductions at the state and federal level, those revenue decreases account for about a $1.8 billion reduction in revenue. The additional maintenance needs are about $900 million. About $600 million of that is just tied up in growth caused by inflation, and another $300 million is needed to cover the cost of identified maintenance needs in our maintenance operating fund. Ray Pethel talked about this issue of crossover last month a bit. The fact that maintenance needs have outpaced available revenues means that we have had to take funds from construction to cover maintenance. I'm going to take the second bullet first. Debt service obligations account for about $600 million in this tentative program and have to be covered. I want to spend just a little bit of time on the cost estimates because it can be confusing. The revised cost estimates, the revised total construction cost estimates for the projects that are in the program have been increased by $950 million to account for our historically too low of a cost estimate. That $950 million is not a dollar-for-dollar impact in this six-year program, and here's why. Of those projects that make up this $950 million increase in cost, most of them are only in the development phase. So of that 950, about $650 million is tied up in projects that are in development in this tentative program, but wouldn't be constructed until further out years. Now, think about that just a bit to make sure we have that clear. In other words, we did not need to reduce this program by $950 million to cover that total increase, because about $650 million of that, we wouldn't expect to allocate it until the out year, the years beyond the limit of this program. But why is that important? Because if we don't fix that now, then we just continue to jeopardize the six-year program into the future, and you don't want us to do that, and we're not going to do that. In terms of FRANS, we did make maximum use of our ability to obligate FRANS. In round numbers, about $600 million was already tied up in the 2000 bond sale and in the need to replace the $317 million in tax revenues. We took, in round numbers, about another $600 million, with around $450 of that going to highway construction and the remainder going to rail and transit needs. Well, coming back to those goals, how did we measure up? We said we wanted to use realistic revenue projections, and we did. To the best of our ability, as current as we knew them on Friday, that's the numbers that are reflected in here. We wanted to pay off projects in the year of completion, and we did that. That means we're not stringing out allocations just so we can cram more projects into the program. We wanted to remove projects that had no foreseeable source of funding, and we did that, and that's the 179 projects. We said we wanted to adequately fund maintenance, and we did. We covered the identified needs at the expense of construction. And we wanted to maintain, and did maintain, a commitment to mobility and accessibility by continuing to support rail and public transportation. But in spite of these, I'm proud of these check marks. And all 10,000 people that work at VDOT worked hard to check these boxes off. But there's a couple we didn't get. This is a patch to a process that had gone a bit awry. It's not a solution. If you look at the next slide, we must and we will develop reliable processes for cost estimating at every step in our process. These factors, which we developed from a look at 3 years' worth of data, which is more data than was looked at previously, these application of factors is not the way to do business in the long run. It condemns you to mediocrity, if you will, because it says you're never going to get any better and just always determine how far off you are and multiply your number by that. We're not going to do that. I have already commissioned a ad hoc committee chaired by Gary Allen, the director of our research council, to bring to me no later than the end of September of this year a method of cost estimating based on best practices that we can find in the industry And based on what we need, what we know we need to do for cost estimating in Virginia, we may not have everything solved by the end of September, but we will have some methodologies that we can investigate and discuss together that will take us to a place where we know how to estimate the cost of projects. And I feel that we have to improve our ability to manage debt. In the long haul, if we continued, we'd have about $240 million worth of debt annually tied up to make principal and interest payments. I believe we can do better and need to do better. What's next? Tomorrow, depending on our discussion today, tomorrow the tentative program will be presented to you for acceptance. As appropriate and as required, we'll share that with Finance, Transportation, and Appropriations Legislative Committees. And later this afternoon, the program, it's public information, the tentative program, will be available on our website, virginia.org. June the 5th, I have scheduled two public hearings to allow the public and local officials another opportunity to comment on the tentative program. And we would target and anticipate presenting a final revised six-year program to you for consideration on June the 20th. To get to the bottom of all of this, through 4 months of a lot of toil on a lot of people's part, what we want to do is come up with a system and process that allows us to put together a six-year program that we can stand up in front of you and the public, the people that pay us, our customers, and tell you within the limit of human ability that we can do it. That's really where we want to be. It won't include everything. It won't make everybody happy. But when we lay our head down on the pillow at night, we know we can do it. And that's where we want to be. I appreciate your attention. We're available to address any questions that you might have.
Right.
We're going to pass it out.
Yeah, Philip, we could get the tentative program distributed, and let's sort of relax a minute and let people look through it. And you don't have to stay up there. You can come back here.
All right, sir.
You can direct questions at Philip, Bob, Billy, anybody, if you have questions.
While they're passing out the plan, if I may, Mr. Secretary, I'll take just 1 minute to tell you that without Bob Cassada, Charlie Rasnick, Jim Givens, Billy Brown, and a host of other people, but those folks in particular, we wouldn't have been able to stand up here in front of you today and say that what you're getting right now is correct. But it is, and if you get a chance to pat them on the back on the way out the door, I know they'd appreciate it, and I'd appreciate it.
Kenny?
This is not a specific project question. The difference between the $2.9 billion from the December program to today's program, I assume that 1.86 of that is made up of the reduced revenue section?
Yes.
Where does the billion, is that the maintenance figure increasing or?
Partly. The difficulty in comparing those numbers, the total 2.7 revenue reductions and the 2.9 reduction in the plan, those numbers happen to be inconveniently close but aren't directly comparable, because one covered a period of time that now has shifted on the front and the back a year. So it includes the revenue reductions, but it also includes, there's also been about 215 projects that have dropped out of the December plan because they're finished.
Okay, but what I'm trying to get is some number. Let's just use 2.9 for the sake of discussion.
Okay.
The composition of that is, except for $1 billion, the decrease in revenue from all sources. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm trying to establish what kinds of things would make up the other billion.
Maintenance. The increase in maintenance. The debt service. And part of the increases in total construction cost. Bob? That's right.
Okay, I think you probably got some of the questions you've got. It's probably a carryover into Tom Boyd's presentation, too.
Well, I'm looking for more policy. I'm just using numbers to be illustrative. The concern I have about use of the maintenance figure, since the code says maintenance is our number one job, and we are allocating more to maintenance, why is that? What is the difference there? I mean, we're taking it from Peter to pay Paul, if you will. It's the same dollars. It's just being moved from one pot to another. And how does that add to the figure when it might have been construction before, it is now maintenance?
The portion of that was added is the inflationary portion. The 4% year over year, which was not in the plan previously.
But, I mean, if I said that $1.9 billion is the actual difference in this plan, that, I mean, everything else is simply using dollars that were already or are in this plan in a different way than they were used in the other plan. So the real difference is about $1.9 billion. That's what I'm hearing you say, Bob?
Revenue reduction was $1.8 billion of state money. The overall reduction to the construction program was more because there was the revenue reduction is not fully used.
I appreciate that. I'm saying construction, maintenance, whatever you want to call it within the total. The total difference is 1.9 or something in that neighborhood.
Net reduction to
what is available to use for the transportation program of the Commonwealth.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Yes. Is there?
With respect to the briefing, Mr. Commissioner, I noticed that. I mean, one of the things that you highlighted here was the cost escalation in the estimating of the projects. The staff is apparently, the estimating process is skewed somewhat in the past, and now you've come up with a different process. But you're still not happy with that, and you're saying that you need to develop a more reliable cost estimating system based on best practices in the industry. I have no problem with that. But my question is, once we do that, will that allow for any adjustment of some of those programs or projects that you've had to eliminate from the program? Will that allow for some of those to come back in? I didn't hear you say that, or had you had that been thought through?
It has been thought through. First, Mr. White, just for a point of clarification, we haven't come up with a new process yet. We simply came up with a factor that represents how bad we've been and corrected the cost by the use of that factor. We are going to come up with a new process to use for cost estimating that we will be able to use to develop cost moving forward in the next six-year program. Once we come up with that process, I would expect it to affect projects that are included in this current program. I don't know how it's going to affect them yet.
Assuming that it affects them
in a positive way.
That makes some adjustments to that. Is that what I hear you saying?
I think we would be able to make adjustments in the next six-year program. Yes, sir, Brian.
Let me follow up on that. The estimating, the factoring that we're using for this approach to the plan has been one of the things that has bothered me for the last several months.
Yes.
And I understand that we've gone through another iteration of factoring, and that the factor has come down from the previous set that we were given, I think, in January. Might have been later than that. I still have even though there's only $300 million that you explained to us affects the program over the next 6 years within the increased factors, the only thing that hasn't, that I feel hasn't been taken into account is the changes, or are the changes that were made a couple of years ago in the estimating process to include inflation and contingency. And because we're using historical figures, it doesn't appear that any of the projects that we made adjustments to then would have had the time to run their course through our system, and thereby not being included in that history that 3 years.
In the exercise that we just completed, going back 3 years, we built in the policy that this board set forth in the 3.89% plus the contingencies. That should have been taken into account, and it has been. And this is kind of good news. That's been taken into account. And by doing that and looking at a larger source of information, you know, basically the number you had in January went back about 6 months. We went back 3 years, included what you're talking about, included our historical addition of construction management and engineering, and still were able to feel very comfortable with a factor that is lower than the one that was previously used.
I still don't understand how you could have taken into consideration changes that were made in the estimating 2 years ago, because it appeared to me during the previous set of factors that we studied, only projects that had been taken to construction and we knew what the cost eventually was were used. So what I'm saying is that a project that we estimated 2 years ago and included the inflation and the contingency probably could not have been done by now, so we wouldn't have been able to use that information.
The information that we used are projects that were constructed, where we had to add the end project, okay? We brought those back to where we were at concept, field inspection, right away, and at add. That gave us a set of factors. We then looked at how the 3.89%, as well as a couple other contingency factors, would influence this six-year plan. We took the first factor and the second factor together to develop a factor that was then used to inflate these costs. I will tell you this. We did not set out on any predetermined mission to get to a target number. My mission was to have as best factor as we could feel comfortable with that completely represented all the cost, including the cost of inflation.
while I've said clearly that's not a method of business going forward, I feel completely comfortable with the work we did in the recent past to reanalyze those factors which brought down the impact of these construction cost increases. It had an impact of about $460 million in this program. Old factors that were previously discussed versus what we used. A beneficial impact of about $460 million. So the exercise was worth it. And I'd be happy to sit with you, Mohammed Mirshahi, these guys in design in L&D spent a considerable number of hours here making sure we were comfortable with this as an interim method of addressing the cost.
Yes, sir.
And just as a follow-up, I really agree with you on what this does as far as going forward, because anytime that you apply factors to estimates and put them in budgets, my experience has been always that the money gets spent. And that's been my problem with the approach, and that's a given. When something's put in the budget, and it's always everybody's target, and that's what made me feel uneasy and uncomfortable about how we arrived at it.
No. The fact that we've used those to look at these estimates doesn't mean that we've concluded we're going to spend that much money on each of these projects. And part of this study, I want to be able to come to you all and say, you know, at this point in our process, we stop talking about estimates and we talk about budgets and how we're going to manage a project budget, because that's what we need to be doing.
But Mr. Chairman, that goes back. I'm sorry, but I don't want to beat this dead horse to death, but this keeps coming back in my mind, sir, Mr. Commissioner. And that's why I raised the question about if you come up with better estimating process in say, in the September time frame, which you said that you want this committee to get back to you. So that's not going to be at the end of this first year of the program. So, well, and when addressing the matter of spending the money, are we then going to look at some of these projects that are in process and see whether or not this estimate is going to impact it in a positive way? And if it does, we will put in some checks and balances to preclude the expenditure of those dollars, or will we just let that run rampant?
No, sir. We will not let it run rampant, and that's a fair question. By the end of September, I want a recommendation. It's going to take us some time to deal with that. Let's say that by the end of the year, we know we have a process that we're comfortable with. We then can begin to apply that to the projects that are here. And if we find that we believe we have reason to come back and say we could do more than we thought, I believe we would be obligated to bring that information back to you. I want to make sure we don't do that hastily.
I agree.
I want to make sure we don't do it hastily. But if we can do it in a method that could potentially benefit this program, we'll do that.
Right now, we're somewhere in a six-year program, about $7.2 billion worth of capital improvements, I'll call it that. And I'm looking at the numbers, and about a little over $4 billion of that is what I'll call the sticks and bricks of the improvements. That's interstate, primary, urban, secondary systems, which is about 71% of the total, that whole program. The $950 million in revised cost estimates, the development stage and the construction phase is in that four, is that principally in that those four principal programs, interstate, primary, urban, secondary?
Yes, sir.
So, and the 950 includes both those programs, about $650 million, that was the development stage. So about 300, I guess, of the $4 billion, how much of that is in the development stage, how much is in the actual construction part? Can you, off the top of your head? What I'm trying to do is figure out our problem isn't so much maybe on the construction side, but is on the development side of the program, about how we're having our problems right now.
In terms of cost estimating?
Yes.
Our problems are on the development side of the house in terms of cost estimating. We get better as we get closer to add in terms of an estimate versus the bid that comes in. Now, we haven't talked about the fact that once we get a bid on the table, we need to manage that relentlessly once it goes to construction and minimize work orders. But the largest percentage difference between our ability to estimate and what we know what the estimate is certainly at the development stage.
Well, I heard the big number that we heard of a big number percentage increase. That was principally on the development side of the program, but was that across the board on work to be bid and developed, or was that across the board, or was specifically more geared towards the development program?
It was primarily geared toward the development program. Construction cost estimates for projects that are in development are about $650 million of the $950 million.
Was some of the differences more in one particular area for right-of-way acquisition? Was it in utility issues? Was it actual construction costs? We should frankly have a pretty good history about the construction side of it.
Oh, we do. It's. Do you mean was the sample across the board?
Yes.
What we did for the 145 projects, most of them, not all of them, and that's a process problem, not all of them had an estimate at concept, field inspection, right away, and add. Most did. Of that 3 years worth of data, those 145 projects, we took all the ones that had an estimate all the way through and looked at those. Then we took all the ones at field inspection and looked at those, all the right-of-way ones and looked at those. So, yeah, the application of this difference was across the board, with the difference decreasing at each stage.
Just to keep follow up on this, this morning when we were at the Northern Virginia presentation, some questions came up about who was involved in the process. And most of the information came out of the district office. That was their best guess. And some of the localities, I think, would like to be part of the process because they may know some things that we don't know about. And I suspect that happens from time to time, but it's probably especially important at this stage of the game because there may be some things that we're projecting, especially things for right-of-way. There may be some unknown factors that the department might not know about. So we will have the ability to work with the localities to get their input into some of these cost to complete estimates.
Yes, sir.
So there may be some factors like right-of-way or utility locations that the local government may have more suitable knowledge for that
yes,
we can
sir.
Look at our estimate yeah. package.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I guess maybe the question that I have, you probably touched on some of that, is how do we coordinate this plan, this is a public document on a road project that's out down the street, what our estimate is. When our contractors come back in with their bids and our engineering staff begin to go through the bid process looking at the project, how do we coordinate that? As I sit here and look at if we've got an inflation factor in that in a project, is how do we coordinate that we are assured that internally that we're getting the best bid and getting the market price, you know what I'm saying,
sure.
for construction and
stuff. Sure.
I just see that as something we've got to keep a real close handle on.
Oh, absolutely. In terms of raw numbers, in the most recent future, the bids we've been getting have actually been a little less than our estimate at add, the last estimate we made, which, as you know, is protected and very confidential. I don't see it.
We have our engineering staff and construction up through the chief engineer review those bids to make sure that they are responsive and that we award contracts to the lowest responsive bidder. At that point in time, we have to be very good at controlling the work order process.
Any other questions? Okay, well, I'm sure this will be a... Hobie, do you have
another? Well, just one last question. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. One of the issues that's coming up in Northern Virginia that's going to happen around the state, too, is even if we get to the point where we can find more money, we're going to have problems with air quality compliance issues and building into the program something that's going to let us achieve that so when the money is available someday, we can spend it, in fact, do it through some source. And Northern Virginia, we've already seen one project where we only can do so much, even if the money was there to do the whole thing. And the same may happen in other parts of the state. Do we have things built into this program that will help address some of that as far as working with regional authorities? You may not have an answer here to that, but...
Projects that are specifically targeted.
Projects that are specific to help reduce the air quality emissions to get into compliance for federal compliance so that when money is available, future money is available, we don't know when that is, when the new reauthorization happens. So we have the ability to do it.
Somebody sing out if I miss this one. I believe that to the extent that we can keep transit projects here, those accrue credits in the air conformity analysis, and we tried to do that. I do not know if we have specific highway construction projects in here aimed at air quality conformity or not. Pierce?
Thank you. The answer to that is yes. Those funding decisions are taking place over the next 45 days at the Washington Council of Governments, where they have designated funding sources specifically to address the clean air conformity questions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any more questions? All right, well, this I know this item will remain on our agenda rest of the day and tonight and tomorrow, even though we'll move on with other items on the agenda. Next is Tom Boyd.
Mr. Secretary, may
yes.
I say something? I was running behind today, but on my way down here, I was called by the four members of the General Assembly in regards to Phillip's presentation in the Stanton District. Senator Miller, who has just made chairman of the JLARC committee, wanted me to express that they were very, very impressed with your presentation, Phillip. In fact, one of them told me you were a sharp cookie. I'm not going to tell you which one, but I did want to get that out, how impressed they were with the outstanding work you have done to put this plan together. And I say that only in January, when you go over there and you ask for money, remind them of what they have said about you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, David. Tom Boyd. Preliminary fiscal 03 budget revenue sources.
More money. Now she wants some more money from you, Philip. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John is in the process of handing out a proposed budget, and included in that is a separate sheet. I was asked to discuss very briefly, revenues. At the Budget and Finance Committee meeting, I guess the show's over. At the Budget and Finance Committee meeting, I presented this information. What this schedule that you will see does, it compares December's six-year program, what the forecast at that time was for 03 revenues, as compared to what this budget is doing for 03. Now, when you get this schedule, if you look strictly down at the total, you're going to see that it looks like we have $169 million more in revenue. But included in that, when you look at it, is $566 million in debt that's being sold to bring those, that cash inflow up. So I don't want you confused by that schedule. You'll see that the motor vehicle fuels are estimated to be down from what we thought. Sales taxes on motor vehicles will be down from what we thought. Obviously, the general funds that are other areas that we thought were going to have been moved. Our revenue streams as a source of funding are down. Some of it's because of the economy. Some of it's because it was needed in other areas of the state. And I think it's reflective in what the commissioner showed. By the way, I think you're a smart cookie, too. Some of it is reflected in what we do here. I want John to go through the budget. He and his staff worked very hard on this and put it together. Kenny's one that asked me about the schedule.
I noticed that there's a $233 million drop in federal funding sources.
Yes, sir.
What is that composed of?
Part of that, about $90 million of that, is the Woodrow Wilson Bridge change from one year to the next. Part of that is the RABA situation.
The who?
Revenue Aligned Budget Authorization, where that was a process set by the T21, where as more revenue came in the next year, they would divvy it up among the states and give it back. This is a case, though, where the revenues came in less than they anticipated, so now they want it back. So we have a RABA reduction in there. Part of it is because we changed from planning money based on our apportioned level, which is the max you could possibly get, to our obligating limit, which really, they say, you're apportioned this, but you really only can spend this. And we put a budget together based on what we could spend, not on some maximum number. Otherwise, we were starting off in the hole, and we didn't think that was appropriate.
Now, yesterday, it's my understanding that the House of Representatives put in the supplementary budget about $102 million that was originally going to be cut under the President's budget from Virginia, along with every other state. Will that be reflected in these numbers?
It is not in these numbers because it has to pass, as you know, both houses. That's basically the RABA offset. I know Congress is working on adjusting for that RABA impact, and that was basically for that impact. And, of course, until it passes, right, I don't want to count on it.
If it passes, hopefully when it passes,
correct,
and we get new numbers from the Federal Highway Administration, which has been our policy, we wait till we get those numbers, it absolutely will be reflected.
Then what's going to happen to it? You don't have to answer that.
Chapter
revenue
two.
Increases.
Well, sir, that raises another. My ears are tuned to that because anytime I hear where there's a possibility of some new revenue, I just want to know how are we going to utilize that. Will the board get involved in that, or is that just going to be handled by the staff, and the decision going to be made there, or will the board members be concerned with that because of the big hits that we're taking now?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There will not be any unexpected revenue that comes in will not be spent without CTB involved. Absolutely.
You're correct. I'm going to switch places with John here, and I'll run the slideshow and let him do the speaking on the budget. But I wanted to share with you some of the revenue changes from back then to after the session, so you get a kind of a handle on the magnitude of the change. This is just one year. We've already reflected the large change over 6 years. This is just the one-year impact that we're looking at. Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'd like to take this time to review with you the VDOT tentative budget for fiscal year 2003. What I'm going to do is just give you a quick overview of what is in the document, a little explanation as to what's changed, and I will be glad to take questions now and as well as later as you want to call us. What you'll find in this budget is, from just a broad overview, is a total budget of $3.4 billion. First off, don't be alarmed that number is bigger than prior years. That number, while it stands out as a gross total budget greater than previous budgets, it does include some bond proceeds, and we'll talk about those a little more later. The major components of that $3.4 billion are illustrated here. You'll see that about $2.9 billion is actually the component that is for VDOT programs. The remainder goes to mass transit, support to the general fund. The major component of that 343 is the $317 million in sales tax that is being diverted to the general fund from the trust fund this year, as well as support to other state agencies. As you start to look through the document, you'll find probably pretty quickly that the format of the document is different from past years. Staff and I have worked very hard to try to make this document more readable and clearer to the general user. You'll find as you look into it, each section is clearly balanced. You'll see that revenues equal anticipated use of revenues or the allocation thereof. And just to illustrate quickly the couple of different ways we've just presented this, if you turn to page 15 in your budget that I just provided you, you'll see on those pages, 15 and 16, a snapshot of VDOT's budget. Of all 60-some-odd pages in this document, they are summarized on those two. So that gives you, at least the casual reader especially, a quick snapshot of all their sources of funding and all the programmed use of those funds. Beginning on pages 18, there is a more detailed breakout and illustration of the use of the revenue sources and uses of those revenues specifically to the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund. And then on page 22 through 33, you find the detailed breakout of the revenue sources and the subsequent use of those funds for the Transportation Trust Fund. Turning to revenue specifically, the total budget of 3.4 is $182 million greater than the fiscal year 2001-2002 budget. However, as I mentioned earlier, that amount includes $567 million in anticipated bond proceeds. If you were to back those proceeds out, you would be at a level that's about $400 million lower than last year's budget.
Now, could I ask a question?
Yeah.
Does that include the $317 million that was taken away on the sales tax, the half cent on the sales tax for this year and replaced by FRANS?
The 317 is included in that number because the revenue will come to us and then it is shown as a transfer out to the general fund.
And then
as a
we
source.
Pay a debt service on FRANS, is that correct?
That is correct.
How much?
The debt service on the 317 is about $40 million a year. The General Assembly provided about $40 million during the first biennium to contribute toward the debt service on those. This chart it doesn't look very nice in your handout, but it's also in your budget. You can find it on page 7. Just illustrates graphically the sources of revenues for VDOT. You'll see that the majority of their revenue, about 50%, is state funded through the Transportation Trust Fund Special Session and the Highway Maintenance and Operating Fund revenues. About another 20% is from federal sources. The remainder come through various other sources. Those state revenues, just looking at state revenues in total, are about $80 million down compared to last fiscal year. Turning to federal revenues, which are a large component of our construction program, as you know, the sources of those are from gas taxes. We do get some considerable federal revenue related to demonstration projects or priority projects, so-called earmarks. That amount can make your federal revenue seem inflated and makes it a little difficult to compare from year to year at times. We also received some emergency funding through FEMA as well as through Federal Highway. Those amounts as well are actually amounts we wish we never had to collect because we don't want the disasters. But they do skew year-to-year comparisons. What we are showing is from last fiscal year compared to this fiscal year, there's approximately $306 million less federal revenues anticipated. Of that $306 million, about $90 million is attributable to specific or earmarked funds for Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Those funds are not comparable from year to year. Of the remaining $200 million, the differences are impacted by one, the RABA adjustment mentioned earlier, about half of that, and the other half relates to the change in the way we estimate our federal revenues. Historically, we have estimated federal revenues using Federal Highways tables of apportionments to the state of Virginia. And using those apportionments, Federal Highway each year through Congress gives us, or gives all states, an obligation authority limit in which they can utilize during that year. Think of it as a contract authority. How much federal money can you actually commit to doing work during that fiscal year? So what we have done is we have taken our apportionment level and reduced it to the obligation authority level, which historically for Virginia has been about 13%, to provide a more conservative federal revenue estimate for six-year program development. As mentioned earlier, we have anticipated $567 million in bond proceeds. Of that, the majority are FRANs, the $317 million to replace the sales and use taxes that are being diverted to, sales tax being diverted to the general fund. And then there are another $204 million in FRANs anticipated to be sold to fund eligible VTA projects. Apart from the FRANs, we do have plans to sell $46 million in bonds for the Northern Virginia Transportation District. How do we plan to use these monies? We've identified, again, $3.4 billion in total revenue estimates. Those estimates, or those revenues, are being allocated, programmed, as you will, to different sources. It's important to note that of that 3.4, only about 2.9 actually is for use for VDOT. $181 million is funding for mass transit ports and airports. Mentioned earlier, the support to both the general fund and to other state agencies.
Question that I was bringing up in the Finance Committee meeting, of the 2.8, the actual construction in Kidney Street is, what is that?
Of the 2.8, and we will get to that a little later on, is about $1.5 billion of that is for construction program. And of that, which is the number you were talking about earlier, only about $600 million of that is actually on systems construction. And we'll talk a little more about that a little further into the presentation. This again is just a graphical illustration of the allocation of our revenues. Again, the chart is found on page 8 of the budget document. You'll see that the maintenance and construction funding are almost equally split at 33%. We have other components then coming in there for administration, other modes being for ports, mass transit and airports, and you see the transfers going out for the sales tax and some of the other components are a significant slice of the pie. Speaking to the allocations just for VDOT, the $2.9 billion, again, that is, of that 2.9, the major programs supported by that 2.9 are this, the construction program, $1.5 billion, maintenance program, which is running at almost $900 million, There's support to the financial assistance to the localities, which is the city and county maintenance payments, about $250 million. And then administration is only about just over $100 million out of that total 2.8. Changes. The number, if you compare those programs back to the fiscal 02 budget, you'll see that the systems construction component dropped $134 million. Maintenance is up $30 million, and that number is net of the federal FEMA or emergency funding. We have an additional $14 million for financial assistance to localities and a $1 million increase in administration. Of the construction component, the billion and a half dollars, as mentioned, about $600 million of that relates specifically to the systems construction, being interstate, primary, secondary, and urban. And that is about a $350 million reduction. Important to note there that there is close to $100 million in regional dollars that the MPOs would distribute to the systems and to the other modes that still remain in the next line, access and other construction. So that percentage drop of 32% really isn't that great once we have a true apples-to-apples comparison with last year's budget. And the other component here that makes up the majority of the $1.5 billion is $372 million for the Priority Transportation Fund. And of that 372, as mentioned earlier, there's $204 million in planned bond proceeds. To summarize, as I said at the beginning, of this $3.4 billion, be careful not to get caught saying it's the largest budget we've ever had. If you back out, net out $500 million anticipated debt financing, work that we're doing today that we've got to pay for tomorrow, the budget is really $2.9 billion.
Kenny?
I hate to keep beating this horse, but $317 million of that used to be come to transportation from the sales tax revenues, the half cent. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
So if that hadn't been changed, if we'd have been getting the money we should have gotten this year, I mean, I understand we're still getting it. It's just taken a different format. So the net loss is not 500.
It'll be 317 less.
83.
Yeah. I don't quite follow that.
Right. Well, we get $317 million a year. At least that's what it's been for the half cent on the sales tax in the 86 referendum.
Right.
We are not getting that this year for transportation. The legislature replaced that money with FRANS, allowing us to use the FRANS.
But we still got to pay the taxes on the FRANS.
Yeah, but
the interest on the
FRANS. You look at this presentation, they keep talking about this $500 million.
Right.
And it's nothing, it's not $500 million. It's $183 million, because the 317 is still there. It just looks, it's an apple instead of an orange.
If the sales tax monies were not diverted, the 3.4 budget billion would be 3.1 billion, and your debt, the amount financed through sale of France would be 200 million versus 500 million.
Right.
That clarifies.
Randy?
The $204 million in bonds, you refresh my memory on just in large categories where that's going, please, the bonds?
Actually, I think I might have to, well, my program staff have left.
Okay. They knew I was going to ask
through the six-year program, they determined how much bonding they needed. I believe the greatest portion of that was utilized to pick up the general fund projects, which we were given authority or flexibility to use bond financing through the FRANS for the projects that were under the general fund list in the DTA. With the loss of those general funds and then they provided us flexibility to use friends to then backfill to help get out some of that whole, lessen that burden.
Remember the $100 million a year we were getting on the insurance premiums?
Yes.
How did that finally end up in the budget?
The final result on that is they provided $106 million in fiscal 03 of insurance premiums, but none in 04. And of course, what we're looking at here from a budget standpoint is only 03. From the standpoint of the six-year program, we did not anticipate receipt of any additional insurance proceed revenues in the outer years.
So when they gave it to us in 2000, they took it away in 2002?
We're no longer including it in our anticipated revenue stream.
Okay.
One other comment I'd like to make is that as you have time to look at this document, please provide me some feedback on the new layout, either for or against that. Welcome your comments. Look at this as a document for us to plan our business, but also to provide you with information. So the clearer it can be, and the more valuable it is to you, the more valuable it'll be to everybody.
Hobie?
I've been thinking about what Kenny's point was there earlier and what it does to our revenue. Right now, we have about $600 million in there for the interstate primary, secondary, and urban system. And of the $500 million that we saw up there, some of that is being replaced. $300 million of that is coming back to us at a later date through other allocations. I'm confused still about Kenny's point here. That money is gone. Something's not clicking here. So if you could...
The $500 million.
Right.
We will repay over the next 10 years.
I thought there was a method that some of that's being repaid out of other sources of monies.
The point I'm trying to make is that, and let's just take the insurance premium money. The legislature, when they put VTA 2000 together, said, well, this is going to help fund it. Well, we still have the projects in VTA 2000, but we don't have that $100 million a year after this year. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
317, we don't have.
In the future years, we'll have the general fund that we're funding.
See, this is one of the reasons why I was quite concerned about the General Assembly making contributions to getting involved in transportation initiatives when this thing happened back in, 2000? And I knew this was going to happen because politicians always find a way to take something back that they give you.
Yes, sir.
Careful, sir.
All right.
You are one.
It's all Butch Davies' fault. Any other questions? Yeah, Roy.
A question. We talked with John and Tom, and when I look at the numbers, you know, you take numbers and you go anywhere with them. But one concern that I really have, and they're going to get us a report, and I think we've got it here. To just when you look at it, $3.4 billion budget. And help me, I don't know. Make too big a blunder here. But on page 23, in your revenue forecast, this first section there, the $679,637,000, they are those fees on fuel taxes and all sales tax, all those type things that feed those monies that we depend on for highway construction. Okay, then if I go to page 31 and I look at the total systems construction, and I see $596,831,000. And if I go up and subtract the interstate, now that's all federal money. Is that correct?
Well, it includes a match. There's a match component.
Okay, but it's basically something. If I subtract that, the state taxpayers are putting in $680 million on page 23, And if we take out the 223 and Interstate on page 31, we have road construction now $374 million. Am I looking at that right?
Yeah,
I don't want to use the term funny money when we get into all these other things, but
that's not all the work.
I know that's not all of it, but what I'm trying, what I've been trying to zero in here is to make sure that of all of the budget dollars in this agency, that the greatest percentage of those budget dollars as we can have need to go back into the construction so that the taxpayers see it, because that's what they get. Every time you discuss something about road construction or they come to you about it, they say, but I pay my gasoline taxes. I pay my sales tax. And when you pick at these numbers, you begin to, you know,
It's a couple things, and I'll just give you a very brief answer, and we will work you up a schedule as you asked for. But of that state revenue that you're seeing there, you know, as mentioned, we have hit the point where the maintenance fund does not, its revenues don't meet its needs. So of that almost $700 million, $150 million is going back to fund maintenance program. So then you start from there, pick up your federal dollars, and then, as we talked earlier, you have access and other and all of your other the modal components that come off the top before you ever get to the formula distributions. So there is
I understand. I wish we could just get a simplification here that we really see.
We will.
We'll provide that.
This is leaps and yards ahead of where we used to be. But we can get a lot simpler.
Obi?
Question. We got this book right here, and I've been kind of scanning through and kind of doing both at the same time. I don't know whether we can ask a general question about either one of these things, or is that time for later? You know, I was going through the new program here, and both on the construction side and the feasibility side, there's a number there on the right-hand column that says cost to complete. And when you start adding them up, it's a big number. Some of it's on the construction side, some of it's on the feasibility side. And I guess what's the plan for that?
That's cost outside the six-year program. In other words, the project may not be finished at the end of the 6 years, but that's the estimated cost that will be needed later. So okay. Next year when we do the program, some of that will move into the 6 year.
Yeah, that's no change.
That's what we've always done, but that's what it's for.
No, I understand, but I guess we were in this plan. I thought we were trying to pay for most of it.
Well, but you're always going to have projects that start in year five. It won't be finished by year six. So, you know, that's the cost to finish those projects later. That when we move that next year in, some of that cost will move into the sixth year. And y'all, it's a running total. You always have it running total because projects will always be underway at the end of the 6 years. At least I hope so. That's why I got a job.
Well, some of these things, even on the feasibility phase, I saw we don't even on. We have costs for engineering and right-of-way acquisition, and some of that there's a cost complete even on that side, on the right-of-way side. So the question is, on some of these things, are we generally have a policy that unless we're funded, we won't start some of these things, even on the right-of-way acquisition side. I don't know if we got any flexibility at all for some of these bigger projects. That process can start.
Again, if we don't start right away to the sixth year, right. Some of that right away won't be purchased to the seventh year, which is now in the program right now. Basically, that college should be labeled seventh and later years is another way to look at it. If I may, on the budget, this is our proposal to you. It does not require a vote tomorrow. We will be bringing back to you the refined, if you have changes, for the board next month to approve. So please, if you have any comments, any questions, any changes, please let John or myself know so we can incorporate those. We're here to help you, to answer questions, to provide summaries, or whatever you need to help you make a decision on whether it's the right thing to do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's John, our presentation.
Thank you.